How's it going, everybody? Brian Alvarez here on Wrestling Observer Live. We are here for the next 2 hours talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts. And what a show we have for you today. We're going to take a look back at 2011. That's right, we've got a 2011 year in review show. And if this show goes well, possibility down the road, we may do other years looking back. A look back at 2005, let's say. A look back at 1994. We'll see how it goes. We, of course, did a look back at the rise and fall of WCW a couple of weeks back. And as I went into the show, I thought this should be easy. Hopefully we can not run out of stuff to talk about in 2 hours. As it turns out, we ran out of time. And I am strongly suspecting that on this show here, we're not even going to make it all the way through 2011. But we're going to look at some of the top stories of the year. And we are going to get your thoughts on some of your memories of 2011. What are the good things in 2011? Or some of the best matches? Or some of the worst things about 2011? We'll talk about pro wrestling and mixed martial arts. There is a lot of stuff to talk about. We are joined, as we are every week, by Mike Sempervivi of the Adam and Mike Big Audio Nightmare here at WrestlingObserver.com, who was, in fact, here in 2011. And, Mike, are you excited to kick this show off here today?
Absolutely. I can remember 2011.
Now, if we did a show on 2010, would that be a little more difficult?
Yeah, actually, it would be.
Now, for those of you that want to follow along, you know, always head to WrestlingObserver.com, and the easiest way to find out what happened in 2011 is to go through the archives of Figure Four Weekly and the Wrestling Observer newsletter. We do newsletters at least once a week, sometimes twice a week. The Observer sometimes has two-issue weeks, so you have either two or three newsletters to look through every week, talk about everything that happened on any given week, and over the course of the year, everything that happened in all of the year. We've got them dating back to 2005. Actually, Figure Four, I think, goes back to 2001. Observer goes back to 2008, plus there are a bunch of issues from 1991 through 1994 online as well. So those are awfully fun to check out. We're going to be back in just a moment. We're going to get it kicked off. The year in review, 2011. What were some of the best and worst things to happen in pro wrestling and mixed martial arts in that year? We'll talk about that here in just a moment. You're listening to Wrestling Observer Live here on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. We are here for the next 2 hours talking the year 2011. What are some of the top stories in 2011? What are some of the most memorable matches? Going to talk about that here for the next 2 hours here on this program, both pro wrestling and mixed martial arts. Joined, as always, by Mike Sempervivi of the Adam and Mike Big Audio Nightmare over at WrestlingObserver.com. And Mike, 2011 opened up with some mixed martial arts news, in fact. Dynamite, the MMA extravaganza in Japan, did a 9.2 rating, dropping below a 10, and a pretty disastrous rating, all things considered. Japanese MMA scene and pro wrestling scene as well, serious hit. Since the mid-90s and late 2000s, the heyday, or the early 2000s. And wrestling has sort of undergone kind of a renaissance in some ways, more creative than business-wise. But MMA in Japan, rough 2011.
Oh, yeah, it was a bad way to start the year. So bad that, you know, as we're getting to the end of 2011 here, you know, there was talk of whether there was even going to be any semblance of MMA on network TV, which would be for the first time in a very long time. And Antonio Inoki has stepped up, I guess, in a way, and he's going to be putting together a show. But, yeah, they were hoping that this was going to be, you know, one last grasp at getting some eyeballs back in Japan on MMA, and unfortunately it was not the case. They tried to cut down the size of the show. They shifted times. They brought as much firepower as they absolutely could. I mean, they had Takuro, and they had Miata, and they had Minowa Man. They had all the guys they possibly could put out there. Aoki fighting Ishii and LeBanner, I believe, was probably the real main event. And then you had Sakuraba and being out there for, you know, another sad time against Zeremiskus from K1 or K1 Max fame, and Sakuraba's ear almost comes off in the whole thing, and it was just, you know, in a way, it was very symbolic as far as where Japanese MMA was this year. Take that into, you know, hand in hand with the beatings that these guys got when they came over and tried their hand in the UFC. And, you know, just very symbolic state of affairs for Japanese MMA right off the bat in 2011.
And right off the bat, we had some major changes in UFC and a look at the rest of the year. First off, Chuck Liddell officially retired. He had, of course, retired before, but talked his way into one last fight with Zuffa. And in early January, he retired and took on what they claimed was an office job. Not sure exactly what he was doing. He is an executive, or he was the executive vice president. That was a role of business development. And, you know, he had a hell of a career, but all good things come to an end. And it came to an end for Chuck Liddell.
Yeah, that's the whole thing. It, you know, his job is now wearing a suit, and that's okay. You know what? If he was going to get a superfluous position where he was drawing a paycheck, you know what? Some of those guys who helped build that company certainly deserve that, and he's one of them. So I'd much rather see him in that position than out there fighting. And again, he didn't look. He got caught in that last fight, and obviously it was time for him to go, but didn't embarrass himself at all on the way out the door or anything like that. And I believe the position you spoke of basically comes from the fact that I think if it was up to Chuck Liddell, honestly, he'd still be fighting. He still wants to fight. But it was the best thing for all the parties involved, Dana letting him take one more last fight out there. And, again, him not embarrassing himself and then going on to basically a position of wearing a suit.
It was also January that Cain Velasquez went down with shoulder surgery, and at the time it was believed he was going to be out most of 2011. He, of course, was the UFC heavyweight champion at the time. He had just beaten Brock Lesnar in a short and wild fight. I was there for that fight. It was insane. And he got hurt, and he went down, and in fact, was out until November 12, 2011, which was the 18th anniversary of the birth of UFC, the main event of UFC on Fox. May as well talk about that right now. UFC on Fox, biggest audience in the history of United States MMA. Probably between all viewings, it hit 10 million viewers. The rating, nothing to really write home about, but the actual viewership, particularly for that fight, was awesome. And Fox was happy about it, and UFC was happy about it, and it bodes well for the 2012 official debut of UFC on Fox. This was kind of a, it was the official debut, but it wasn't part of the contract. The way that UFC and Spike have structured their contract, UFC was allowed to run shows on network television, just not on any other cable network. But that changes in 2012, and Cain Velasquez in that fight in less, a little over a minute, was beaten by Junior Dos Santos, who became the UFC heavyweight champion, and quite a year for UFC. There were a lot of down periods, as we will talk about here. Also a lot of positives, the biggest of which was the Fox deal. $100 million, approximately, over the next 7 years when they signed that deal, and that is big money for UFC. Good news for them. Other things, other business indicators, not so well in 2011.
Yeah, not so much, but it's amazing the difference the decade makes. We come out talking about Japanese MMA at its lowest point that it has been pretty much ever, and we talked 10 years ago. It's like, imagine if you could actually see a UFC show one day on network TV the same way in Japan that it's drawing these monster numbers, and, you know, it all turns around where it's happening in North America and not over there. But yeah, for the, you know, and Cain Velasquez getting hurt right off the bat was a sign for the rest of the year, and that they lost a lot of main events and they had a lot of nonsense going on. Also coming into the year, they had the old Chael Sonnen thing too, which was looming over them, unfortunately, as well. But one thing they actually started the year with was Gray Maynard and Frankie Edgar, and in their rematch, which, you know, that UFC 125 show was very good, and it also set the tone for the year, and that they had a lot of pay-per-views that did not do monster numbers, and they had some notable exceptions to that. But one thing you could say really up and down as far as the $50 spent for those shows, even though they seem to be down a little bit, the quality of the shows stayed up, and that's very important when you're having down times. At least people are getting bang for their buck. So when you do go back to it, at least you can see they're not ripping anybody off. And that 125 show, again, which did not do great numbers or anything like that, at least was a damn good show from top to bottom, and was another sign of the UFC and Joe Silva being able to, with all the injuries and all the expansion of shows and everything else going on, they were able to hold on as far as matchmaking goes really as best as they could.
How about the story of Chael Sonnen? He had quite a year. Early January, he was suspended. His contract was essentially frozen by UFC in the wake of him pleading guilty to money laundering charges in a 2006 real estate case. And he went from being suspended to actually fighting in UFC in Texas. Not in Las Vegas or the state where he was originally suspended, California. He also then went on to challenge Anderson Silva to a Loser Leaves Town match, which after Anderson Silva did not immediately answer, he later backed off and said, well, you know, I made him an offer. Offers, you know, they got a date in which you need to accept, and he didn't. So still wanted to fight with Anderson Silva as the year was coming to a close. Hadn't got it yet. Was hoping to get it, but seriously backing down on the whole Loser Leaves Town stipulation. And it was a very controversial year for Chael Sonnen. Lance Storm, in fact, who appears on our show all the time, officially stopped watching UFC after the whole Chael Sonnen allowed back into fighting without having to get everything cleared up in California went down. And it was very controversial, depending on, I guess, really what side you were on. I hate to say choosing sides, but a lot of MMA fans didn't even look at it as a big news item at all that he was fighting again. And others were extremely upset. And Mike, what camp did you fall into?
I, you know, kind of fell into the camp that, you know, he should have been suspended for longer, and there should have been things that come out of it. But realistically, he got away with what he got away with, and I can't blame him for that. But one thing I can call out was the incompetence of the athletic commissions and their ability of the two biggest ones to really lock down and work with each other. After Sonnen said that one of the commissioners had he put words in one of the commissioners' mouths. So it just showed, really, there's a bright shining light on that and judging some other things this year that, you know, are out of the fighters' hands and really need to be fixed.
We're going to head to a break. When we return, we're going to continue 2011, the year in review, here on Wrestling Observer Live, Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. We are here for the next hour and a half talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts. The year in review, 2011. We spent the first portion of the show talking about January. Still not done yet. In other words, we're not getting all the way through 2011. But we're going to do our best. And a lot of these stories take place early in the year. We can talk about things that took place later in the year as well, such as Cain Velasquez going down for shoulder surgery, which took place in early January. And that, of course, played into something that happened later on in the year as Velasquez lost his title to Junior Dos Santos in the main event of the first ever UFC on Fox. So we'll talk about all of these stories and more coming up. One story that wasn't a big story, but it was kind of a funny story looking back. Do you remember when the Secret Service spoke to Jacob Volkman about comments he had made about Barack Obama and wanting to beat him up?
Yes, I do recall that. Yeah, he was rolled up on when he was at school, was he not? He's a school teacher and made some comments about Obama and comments about his education and or his education plan, and yeah, it seemed to be very off the cuff kind of, you know, comments, not a big deal or anything. But then again, I guess if you say anything about the President of the United States in this era, that yeah, you should expect probably a visit from the Secret Service, which he got.
Yeah, he was doing an interview with Ariel Helwani and said somebody needed to knock some sense into Obama, and I believe he volunteered, which was the problem. And a Secret Service agent showed up while he was teaching a youth class and pulled him aside. And essentially, the guy, according to Volkman, apologized for coming, but said he had to come. So he had to explain the situation. Got tons of media for this. But this is kind of an example of sometimes, You know, the WWE, one of the top stories of the latter half of 2011 was WWE and Twitter and how they went absolutely crazy promoting their Twitter and trying to get things to trend and everything like that. And people are they were arguing at the time, what does this even mean? And the reality is that as much as people talk about how important it is to get publicity, the Jacob Volkman story got so much media play all over his home state of Minnesota. Top story on newscasts. It made it to TMZ. And by the end of 2011, most people probably still couldn't pick Jacob Volkman out of a lineup.
No, but you know what? It's also trying to take advantage of the time that you are in that little bit of spotlight. And he was able to play to the hilt as best as he possibly could. Now, this was John Jones, Machida, Forrest Griffin, somebody like that. Obviously, the story would have had legs for a lot longer, but I'll give some credit to Volkman, obviously, for you know, at least continuing out as much as he possibly could in that little bit of time.
Matt Hardy debuted in TNA in early 2011, and what a year Matt Hardy had. He debuted in TNA, he had some matches, he fell off the wagon. He put up a million crazy videos on YouTube. He exposed himself as being, I don't know what he exposed himself as being, but by the end of the year.
Would that be fair?
As what?
A hot mess would be an appropriate term to describe Jeff Hardy this year.
I would just say a mess. I've seen his mugshots. It was not a hot mess. Now, by the end of November at least, he was in jail. So 11 months later, locked up, $1 million bond. He had approximately five arrests prior to being locked up, one of which was a major drug bust. He was sent to jail with $1 million bond. And keep in mind, for those of you that followed the Jeff Hardy story, which actually took place in 2010 and 2011, and I think even 2009, I'd have to go back to when he was first arrested, but even Jeff Hardy, with all of the drugs that were found in his home, he was not locked up on $1 million bond. Matt was considered a menace to society, a legitimate menace to society, and locked up. At first, they said, okay, well, Matt, we're going to release you here on the grounds that you go to WWE-sponsored rehab, because, of course, they offer rehab to any of their previous contracted performers free of charge. So he went to rehab. Not sure exactly what kind of rehab this was, but I do know that a couple of weeks after he showed up, he was back home. Apparently, they let him go home for a while. Sounds like a bad idea. He immediately tweeted a picture of himself and his girlfriend, Rebby Sky, reclining, buck naked. And within 24 hours, he was back in jail because apparently he was back at the rehab center. He was acting in an erratic manner. They believed he was under the influence of something. They tested him. His blood alcohol content was exceedingly high. He claimed he had just drank mouthwash. They did not believe the story, obviously. And back to jail he went. And nobody posted bail for him. Apparently, he didn't have the money to post bail, or he realized that perhaps the reality was if he posted the money, he probably wasn't going to see that money again. So he's hanging out, or he was hanging out, at least at the end of November.
And this is, you know, skipping over the fact that at some point during the year, I can't remember exactly when it was, but it was right before he went into rehab and was arrested for, I don't know, the 7-8 millionth time, he put up a what he claimed later to be what he thought was a wrestling angle. But what 99% of the world, if they would have seen this, would have went, well, that's a suicide letter, where he said Matt Hardy is goodbye, and he had a basically a countdown clock to the end of the night, where it made it look like to a lot of people that he was, well, going to commit suicide. He could not believe how anyone could just imagine that he would want to commit suicide after putting up what looked to be a suicide letter on YouTube. But caught some heat for that, obviously, and just really said it all. I mean, Jeff Hardy this year the same way, and obviously his story by the end of the year looked to be, you know, obviously much improved from the beginning of the year. But the year started off with him in New Japan at the Tokyo Dome, completely botching and looking awful in a match against Tetsuya Naito, which kind of flew under the radar for the most part because obviously taking place in Japan, it wasn't something they hyped up on TNA telecasts or anything like that, but it seemed like something was seriously wrong with the guy, to which it was claimed, you know, jet lag and this, that, and the other. But as time went out after this year when it came to Jeff Hardy, we found out that no, he would occasionally be in matches where he shouldn't be performing, and surprisingly, TNA put him out there a couple times instead of making alternate decisions. So, you know, it was not a good year to be a Hardy member.
In the early part of the year, Brock Lesnar and Junior Dos Santos were chosen as coaches of Ultimate Fighter, which upon first hearing that, I thought, my God, this will be the highest rated series of Ultimate Fighter of all time. Brock Lesnar is coaching. We learned a very valuable lesson. Big names coaching Ultimate Fighter don't mean a whole lot if the big names like each other. And Brock and Junior Dos Santos had a lot of respect for each other. Junior Dos Santos in particular is a ridiculously nice fella. And there were no problems between them. It ended up being, I believe, I could go back, it was either the lowest or one of the lowest rated seasons of Ultimate Fighter of all time. And worse, as they built up to the match between the coaches, another bout of diverticulitis struck Brock Lesnar. He was forced to pull out of the fight, and it ended up being Junior Dos Santos versus Shane Carwin in the pay-per-view event, which took place in June, I believe. It was June 11th, UFC 131 in Vancouver. And Carwin, decision, unanimous decision over Shane Carwin. And that set him up to become the number one contender for the title.
Yeah, again, another in the injury line that the UFC had to deal with this year. And I think another note to that Vancouver show was the fact that there was the, you know, they went back to Vancouver, but the place had opened up, I think, officially now full scale for MMA. It was the first show there as far as that happening, which obviously plays into Toronto a little bit later on, too. But, you know, the UFC, you know, sinking its claws in there and still having trouble in New York, which is going to be a story for 2012. But, yeah, you know, it showed also Shane Carwin, who ended up being injured after that as well and who has not been able to come back. You know, the UFC's heavyweight division, that it's really, as far as name value goes and as far as exciting fighters, really at the top, arguably, that it's ever been. But the injuries have done a real number on the division, unfortunately. But, you know, Cain Velasquez, you did get a guy, even though he's soft-spoken, you're trying to reach more out into the Mexican and Mexican-American demographic, and he had that. And there were a lot of people who were very happy over the fact that there was a Mexican heavyweight champion, or looked at as a Mexican heavyweight champion. So, again, even though they had some issues with injuries and things like that, they did take advantage of marketing and some other things like that, where they were able to, you know, kind of make good things out of bad. Obviously, Brock Lesnar, you wanted to have Brock Lesnar there, but unfortunately that couldn't happen. But what you ended up being pretty good.
Ring of Honor lost their slot on HDNet. And shortly thereafter announced a deal with Sinclair, a series of stations largely throughout the Southeast. I don't get Sinclair, unfortunately. But they moved to Sinclair. They started taping shows different areas around the country, including the Davis Arena in Louisville, Kentucky, home of the old Ohio Valley television show, back when they were a WWE developmental group. And the shows got good reviews. Problem was, not a lot of people were getting a chance to see them, although not a lot of people were getting a chance to see the show on HDNet either. They were available online at the ROH website. If you became a member for, I believe, $7.99 per month, you could watch the shows on Monday. And if not, you could watch them for free the following Thursday. And I guess the question will be answered probably in coming years. What is the future of ROH? Did the Sinclair deal help? Did it hurt? Did it make no difference whatsoever? By the end of 2011, still too early to tell.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I mean, it changed the way their philosophy on how they run shows, because they're only going to chase the TV and that's it, which took them out of major markets, or at least traditional ROH markets. You've got, you know, can this format keep up for a while as long as the pay-per-view sales stay, you know, the same or keep rising? They're you know, losing talent, which obviously they lost the Kings of Wrestling. There were some guys in flux when the deal ran out, but really a surprise and kind of in a throwback fashion from Sinclair Broadcasting.
We've actually got to head to a break. We can talk more about this after the break. Wrestling Observer Live, Sports Byline, Broadcasting Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. We are here talking the 2011 year in review. We are 40 minutes into the show, and so far we're in the middle of January. You know what that means? We're not finishing 2011. Luckily, a lot of the stories we're talking about here that had their genesis in early February, were stories that played out through the rest of the year. So we're going to do a pretty good job, I think, covering the entire year as best we can, just starting with stories that happened in 2011. In hour two, we're also going to take your memories of 2011, which would bring up some other ideas as well of things to discuss. For the latest news, information in pro wrestling and mixed martial arts, you can always head to WrestlingObserver.com. Daily radio shows. It's pretty much the number one thing if you're a fan of Wrestling Observer Live. You love this show? You only get to hear it once per week? You are missing out. We do shows every single day. I have days where I do four shows in one day. All available to subscribers. It's only, $10.99 a month? I don't even know how much it is for my own website. I think it's $10.99 a month, but it's very cheap. It's the cost of a meal at a relatively cheap restaurant. So anyway, check it out. It's $10.99 a month, and for that price, you get everything. You get not only every brand new radio show we do every single week, and that's 15 to 20 new shows every single week, but if by chance you've got a job where all you do is listen to audio all day because you got nothing else to do at work, if you're one of those people and you run out of audio with the 15 to 20 radio shows we do every single week, fear not. Every show that we have ever done dating back to 2005 is available in the archives right now for you. No extra cost. You just sign up, jump into the archives. They're fully searchable. You can type in Bruno Sammartino, for example. And every show that we have done featuring Bruno Sammartino, some of which may be 7-day shows, you can check out, listen to, and enjoy. So again, you love this show, I guarantee you that you will love a subscription to WrestlingObserver.com. So go check it out. We've got free radio shows. If you scroll down the right-hand side of the page, you can check those out. And if you like what you hear, just think, thousands and thousands and thousands and thousands of those for you for just $10.99 a month. So check it out.
That's the thing. Even if you don't like this show, it's still worth it to subscribe because there's something on there you're going to like because it just reaches across everything.
That's right. Mike, for example, here, one half of the audio, Adam and Mike, Big Audio Nightmare, talking Japan, hockey, whole nine yards. Everything. We cover MMA, pro wrestling, history of MMA. Got it all here at WrestlingObserver.com. All right, let's look at the Royal Rumble this year. The 2011 Royal Rumble, which historically, this is the show that sets up WrestleMania every year. And, of course, came time where all of a sudden Royal Rumble wasn't really the match that set up WrestleMania. In the old days, if you won the Royal Rumble, you were guaranteed a shot at the champion at WrestleMania. Of course, and as the years went on, they decided they were going to mix those things up. And eventually it sort of became a deal where you could win the Royal Rumble, but you weren't necessarily getting a shot at the title. Now, this year, the guy that won the Rumble ended up getting the title much, much, much later. Alberto Del Rio was the winner of this year's Royal Rumble. And it's a funny story with Alberto. He was scheduled to be the WWE champion at first in January. And they changed their mind and had him win the Royal Rumble. And at that point, he was going to win the title at the Elimination Chamber and then at WrestleMania. And they kept putting it off and putting it off. And eventually, he was going to win it at SummerSlam. And they put it off and they put it off. And eventually, they got the title on him, I believe in September. And the whole deal was, we need Alberto Del Rio as champion going into Mexico. Because, you know, Mexican heavyweight champion going into Mexico is going to be huge. As it turned out, they did absolutely nothing with him during the Mexico tour. And by the time the year was out, the guy that Vince McMahon spent nearly an entire year building up for the championship was a guy that Vince McMahon all of a sudden wasn't so high on anymore Didn't work out quite the way I expected, said Vince. And, of course, putting the blame on Alberto Del Rio, as opposed to putting the blame on the person who deserved the blame, that being Vince McMahon, for putting it off and putting it off and putting it off. And Alberto, the longer it took him to get the title, the less people cared. It was like he was running in place. Then he got the title. Then he lost it via submission to John Cena because he'd beaten Cena twice, and they didn't want Cena losing on three straight pay-per-views. Then he won it again, and then he lost it again. It was a terrible title run. It was not Alberto Del Rio's fault at all, but welcome to WWE in 2011.
We started 2011 talking about 2010, and the questions leaving 2010. Well, Wade Barrett's going to get a match against Undertaker at WrestleMania. I don't think they're building him up too well with this Nexus thing. We had John Cena playing Superman against the Nexus. We had them blow a marketing opportunity with the goofy Juan Cena mask because they just could not have John Cena off TV for even one single solitary week. You had what was going to happen with... I mean, there were names and champions that you just shook your head and wondered, you know, good Lord, what are they doing leading into the year? And then you spent the rest of 2011 shaking your head on, oh, my God, they made it worse. Alberto Del Rio, hey, look, Edge retired. Edge had to retire because of neck issues. So WrestleMania, that was kind of understandable why that happened. What happened to Alberto the rest of the year, a guy that when he was signed and put into Florida that no one thought that he could translate, especially without the mask on, that he would be able to get over. He gets over in a shocking way. He's the perfect JBL Million Dollar Man type character that Vince McMahon always stands behind and builds up. And then they kind of hang him out to dry, and they just fail him the same way they failed many of their other characters. In fact, most of their other characters all year long.
Here's a headline for you from early 2011. Dana says Silva versus GSP likely this year. That didn't happen.
Didn't happen, but you know what? That could come up year after year after year after year. And it always leads to great debate because you go, well, geez, you know, GSP's beaten a lot of guys, but he hasn't beaten everybody. Anderson's beaten really all of his guys, and what do you do? But, you know, there's questions over what weight it would be at and what would be fair. It's great for debate, but it's one of those things that it should be brought up for hype purposes. And Dana White would be failing if he didn't bring it up and kind of to perk ears up and create buzz every once in a while. He should say it, but realistically, until they're truly out of opponents, I really don't want to see that fight happen.
In the early part of the year, WWE signed one of the biggest stars in the world, Mystico from CMLL, the only luchador to ever win the Wrestling Observer Wrestler of the Year award, signed with WWE, and what a year this poor fella had. He was brought in. He couldn't really work the WWE style. They wanted to help train him. So they put him in the ring for a long feud with Chavo Guerrero Jr. Now, I guess the idea was that let's put him in with a Guerrero. Obviously, this man can get great matches out of Mystico, not realizing that, in fact, Chavo Guerrero had almost never in his life worked the lucha style. The matches were really no good. They weren't very good on the house shows. They weren't very good on pay-per-view. Chavo ended up being cut over this. They then asked Mystico, well, who can you work with where you can have great matches? We want to showcase you. And Mystico said, my buddy Averno in CMLL. We've had great matches together. So WWE contacted Averno, and they said, get ready. You're going to be coming in soon. By the end of the year, Averno still waiting to come in to WWE. During that period, Mystico had some feuds, some matches here and there, and got over huge with the kids, sold a ton of merchandise, but didn't really break through at the top level as far as everybody else in terms of being a star on WWE TV. And then at Survivor Series, he was doing a dive, and he blew out his knee. And out of action for the foreseeable future at that point. And that actually coming on the heels of a failed wellness policy. An incident where he failed a policy or a test, a wellness policy test, and had a lot of different explanations as to why that was taken off television, written out after, I believe Sheamus gave him a powerbomb on a ladder. And just a rough year for this fella, not to mention the problems backstage with him walking around in an aloof manner and the wrestlers not being all too happy with his attitude. Him being basically having the attitude that I'm one of the biggest stars in the world, which the WWE wrestlers, the mid-card wrestlers and such, were not happy with him having, even though, in fact, he was one of the biggest stars in the entire world.
It's one of those things where talk about a complete and utter failure when it comes to a character. You got to admit this. They did everything right bringing him in, and that's what's going to be forgotten about in this. Triple H, amongst others, showed up in Mexico City, made no bones about, we're hiring Mystico. We know you know who he is. Obviously, you know we can't call him Mystico, but we're signing Mystico. He's now going to be Sin Cara. A lot of pomp and circumstance done up with it. But they give him lighting that they don't explain, which would be fine if they would have explained it, or they never really explained who this guy was other than he was a major star in Mexico, not why people would follow him. Now, you know, they gave him great music, but they gave him this lighting and things that are special, but never really explained why they were special and never explained why he was special. Didn't put him in there, as you said, with guys who would actually make him look good. After that initial thing of diving on Swagger and diving on Sheamus, where it's like, okay, this is what this guy would use to beat the bigger guys. They stick him in there with Chavo, and they have him grind to a halt, and he never really gets back after that. And it's just, it's a shame because it's money wasted. And it's another thing when you look at WWE this year when you go, geez, you know, you just, do they have it? They don't have an aversion to money. They still seem how somehow make money hand over fist, hundreds of millions of dollars a quarter. But the thing is, it's just all of this is going to come to roost later on, and we've seen the erosion over the years of saying this stuff over and over as far as their lack of building guys, their lack of support of guys when things don't go perfect right off the bat, their failures when it comes to manipulating the public and giving them good entertainment and writing things that are logical and make sense. All of these things are going to continue to come to home to roost to them where in a couple of years, and I don't think we're going to be talking about the death of WWE or anything like that, but we're probably still going to be shaking our heads over, you know, these things could have been avoided. And Mystico being a great example of that. Why spend all of that money? Why go through all of that effort and do all of these things and have marketing possibilities with a guy if you're just not going to do anything with him? You hire a guy just to say, we got him. It's not 1984. You didn't get Mad Dog Vachon from Vern at the end of his career just to say, hey, we got him. You got the biggest star in Mexico City who a lot of people know who can be put in there with guys. He doesn't have to be wrestling Sheamus and Triple H and John Cena, but you can utilize him a lot better. And again, one of the massive fails from this year when it comes to getting something across for WWE.
Amazing UFC moments at UFC 126. Main event was Anderson Silva, Vitor Belfort for the 205 title. And Anderson Silva knocked him out with a front kick. A front kick to the face. This was also the rise of Steven Seagal, if I recall correctly, in MMA in 2011. As Steven Seagal taught these men these exotic techniques, such as the front kick. And also on this show, John Jones destroyed Ryan Bader. Absolutely destroyed him. Choked him out. And afterwards, there was a great moment in the cage, which maybe didn't kind of turn a little sour later on in the year. But what happened was Rogan got in the cage and said that Bones's good friend, Rashad Evans, was supposed to get a shot at Shogun Hua. But Shogun, his opponent, Rashad, had injured his knee. And with Rashad out, they needed a replacement, and they were going to give the shot to Bones Jones. And Bones was trying to get the right words out. Shogun hit the ring. They went face-to-face, and both sides agreed. The fight was on, which led to Bones winning the title later in the year. An amazing moment we'll talk more about after the break. Wrestling Observer Live here on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We're back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here, WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com, talking the year in review 2011. And Mike, your thoughts on the rise of Bones Jones in 2011.
What a hell of a story. I was there in Newark where he was, you know, ended up winning the title and coming off the hours before the show, running down a mugger in a park who stole a lady's iPod.
That's right.
Chases the guy down, then wins the title, and just, Incredible. And obviously, they had a little bit of a disappointing crowd in New York. They had the same problem in Philadelphia this year, where that's got to give them a little bit of pause there with the problems they had up in Newark and everything. But as far as creating a star, yeah, John Jones, they did a pretty damn good job of that, and he did a good job himself. And he and Rashad Evans, again, is a fight that at some point is going to happen, and they've given you everything. I mean, everything. They've done everything right in slowly building this feud up, even though it's not pro wrestling, and even though they're not intentionally truly trying to build a feud, they're taking advantage of every little thing that happens, and it's a fight that, yeah, it's going to happen sometime now in 2012, and it's very much looked forward to, and it's something that was planted a year before.
Just a quick question here. You got about 30 seconds to answer. I know it's putting you on the spot, but 2011, very notable for the amount of injuries that took place in UFC. And all the injuries and all the main events that got canceled really did a number on total buy rates over the year. Is this an aberration in 2011, or in 2012 do you think we're going to see the same number of injuries or even more?
We could see even more injuries, and that's because of another issue we could talk about later, which is the fact that fighters don't have to, they can pull out of fights and have their stuff treated and their expenses covered. But you know what, you just hope it doesn't happen to as many top-tier guys, and you gotta look at the law of averages and go, okay, hopefully it doesn't. But really, it's just crossing your fingers.
All right, we're going to head to a break, everybody. When we come back, more. The year of 2011, the year in review. We aren't very far into this, as most of you are probably aware. But we're going to do our best. And in hour two, we're going to take your thoughts on notable moments of 2011, or the best and worst things that happened this year. We're going to get into all of those here when we come back from our hourly break. So check it out. You're listening to Wrestling Observer Live here on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. How's it going, everybody? Brian Alvarez here on Wrestling Observer Live. We're here for the next hour. Pro Wrestling and Mixed Martial Arts. Sirius Satellite Radio, Channel 94. XM Radio, Channel 208. Streaming worldwide online at WrestlingObserver.com. Myself and Mike Sempervivi of the Admin Mike, Big Audio Nightmare, WrestlingObserver.com. We are here talking the year in review, 2011. And, of course, just like when we did a show on WCW, started this show and thought, meh, let's get through the year 2011 the best we can. Well, we spent an hour, and so far we're in January. Suffice to say, we're not going to finish the entire year in review 2011. But luckily, a lot of the stuff we've talked about that started out in 2011, we were able to tell the story of the year. For example, Matt Hardy was signed by TNA in early 2011. And in talking about that, we basically recapped his entire year. So, you're going to get a pretty good look at the year 2011 in general from listening to this show. And what we're going to do here in hour two, we've been flooded with emails from folks that have their memories of 2011. What was the good? What was the bad? What was the ugly of 2011? We're going to get into some of those memories right after this break. So I'm going to wait till later on in the show, but we have so many of them. I want to get into them. Not to mention the fact that by getting into them, it's going to give us some talking points for the rest of 2011. So just as an example right here, this person says his 2011 memories. CM Punk's first work shoot promo, the famous promo that actually was about 6 minutes long, and they learned nothing from that, by the way, being 6 minutes long. And he also mentions Todd Martin quoting Notorious B.I.G. and Rock Fruity Pebbles promo. We'll talk about CM Punk and The Rock when we come back from the break. Got a lot of stuff to talk about there, including CM Punk's year that ended with him as champion after losing at five straight pay-per-views. How does that happen? Well, wrestling's fake. So we'll talk about that when we come back from the break. Plus, Rock drawing the biggest buy rate of 2011 and destined to draw the biggest buy rate of 2012 as well. What that means for WWE business. All that coming up after the break. The year in review 2011 here on Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com, here to talk all the news in pro wrestling and mixed martial arts. Before we get into CM Punk and The Rock, which Bijan here had brought up as his memory of 2011. Mike, before the break, you mentioned, actually during the break, how long before somebody mentioned Strikeforce? Which is a good question. Strikeforce was bought by UFC this year, everybody, and they're still in existence. for the time being. I guess we shall find out what happens in 2012 and beyond. But they ran a World Grand Prix tournament. One of the finalists was not in the original tournament, because that's how things work in tournaments. And, Mike, what were your thoughts this year on Strikeforce?
They missed Gina Carano. CBS, the whole disaster that happened there with Mayhem Miller and the San Jose clan, did really irreputable damage to them as far as, I think, being able to turn it around. Too much pressure from the UFC as well. It's amazing. The UFC swoops in, and again, they buy another tape library. They buy another company, and probably different years would be a lot bigger. If it had happened in 2009, it would have been a lot more of a massive story. But really, after the initial, wow, they bought Strikeforce, it was like the UFC treated it as an afterthought. I think most MMA fans, for the most part, are viewing it as an afterthought, but there could be real ramifications as next year, they go into next year, they're talking about keeping it alive, obviously, to counterbalance itself with Bellator. But really, the biggest question is the question of women's MMA, and the hope, if Strikeforce does stay around, at least it gives women's fighters a chance to compete under the Zuffa banner, even if it's only on Strikeforce shows. So, a lot of question over what you continue to do with that property and the dealings with Showtime and everything else as the year goes on. But, initially, that one and the Donna Goldsmith story with her leaving WWE at the beginning of the year, I figured those would be two massive stories to really, have ramifications and have ripple effects as the year went on, and neither one of them have at all.
Now, the CM Punk promo, the famous promo that he cut prior to the Money in the Bank pay-per-view as his contract was ending, and he vowed to win the title and walk out of WWE, which he did for a day. That, the year of CM Punk. Obviously, the reason he was going to walk away was because he was not happy with how he was being used, and they signed him to a new deal. They gave him the championship at Money in the Bank. He was the hottest wrestler in the entire country and world over the course of about a month. And very quickly, WWE booking caused him to crash back down to earth. And in fact, as noted, he lost at 5 straight pay-per-views in a row, en route to getting a championship match at Survivor Series, where he won the title from Alberto Del Rio. Now, as we mentioned in the first hour, Alberto Del Rio, the whole idea behind his title reign was, we want this man champion going into Mexico. And he got the title. They went to Mexico. It meant nothing. A lot of that, obviously, is the way that he was booked and what they did with him in Mexico. But regardless, he was taken into Mexico's champion. It meant nothing. So, of course, he loses the title to CM Punk at Survivor Series. Why? Well, because Raw is in Chicago. The last Raw of 2011 was scheduled for Chicago, and WWE wanted CM Punk as a champion going into Chicago. Hence, he beat Alberto Del Rio, the man they wanted champion going into Mexico, to win the title to go into Chicago, which means, I guess, to figure out who the next champion is, find out when Raw is going to be the night before WrestleMania, and then presumably whoever's from that hometown is going to be the champion.
But if they do win the title that night before, they'll probably get embarrassed at some point in their hometown next time around. It bothers people a lot more because it's CM Punk, but if you look at what WWE had done last year with Nexus and failing on taking up, the opportunities they had there and the opportunities that they had with Daniel Bryan, Wade Barrett, and some other things they could have done, they did the same thing this year with CM Punk. It's like they have this big, they go into this WrestleMania malaise every single year. They go into this malaise, but you go, okay, well, maybe this time it'll be a little bit different. The Miz was an impotent champion leading into WrestleMania. But you go, okay, even though he's the third banana in this whole thing, we understand why, but you know what? Maybe he'll get some shine off the Rock. Didn't happen. And this malaise of summertime hit, and then they come up with this big thing. They have one thing now seemingly every year where it's like, okay, great, and people take to it, and there's something organic about it where, it makes the hardcore, bitter, 10%er fan that they love to hate, the one that's going to be there no matter what, they take interest. The casual fan takes interest. Somebody, like a Jim Rome in the mainstream media bites on it, and for God knows what reason, and then people who haven't watched wrestling in a while get into it. And these things all kind of tie together, and then it's like they get it and go, well, good, you guys all bid on this. Now we're going to do what we want with it. They did it with Nexus. They did it this year with CM Punk. It's not that I'm upset for CM Punk in a lot of ways. He is higher now than I ever thought he'd be in that company. And frankly, he's where he should be in that company, considering what he brings to the table. And for his financial security and for his future security as far as being a guy on the top of those cards, I believe this is great for him. With that said, creatively, they didn't take advantage of what they should have taken advantage of. And CM Punk, again, you need so little with him. You need to give him so little. You just hand him a little bit, and he's going to take the ball and carry it for you, and he's a guy you can trust out there for the most part, with what you want him to say and all that other stuff. They didn't take advantage of it. They wanted to take it in their own way when people started to bite on it. And look, you can't make everybody happy, but it almost seemed like the WWE, when it came to the Punk thing, kind of went out of their way to make everyone unhappy.
That brings us to The Rock, also the main event of Survivor Series. And as WrestleMania buys continued to pour in, as the year drew to a close, Rock made so much money for WWE in 2011. It's not even funny. And Rock versus Cena in 2012, I have come to the conclusion that no matter how badly they screw that up, it's still going to be a gigantic WrestleMania buy rate, just because it is Rock versus Cena in Miami at WrestleMania. And very successful year. Largely due to Rock. The scary thing is, if you take Rock out of the picture, if Rock, for example, had not come back to WWE this year, their business, I don't want to say they'd be on a WCW-like downfall, but their business would be rather depressing at this point. And Mike, what is your prediction for WrestleMania this year? By far the biggest WrestleMania of all time?
Probably, yeah. And the thing is, you can run that company off WrestleMania. If you cut things like WWE, E-Films, and a lot of the dumb, superfluous stuff that they have, and streamline some things down, you can make money all year long just off of WrestleMania, which is really not the point in their bigger problems and as far as entertaining a wrestling fan all year round. But, yeah, I mean, with the amount of people that have an opportunity to order pay-per-view, with the fact that, if people are going to order one pay-per-view a year, and it's the truth. I mean, you always order that one big fight, UFC, boxing, or otherwise. You always order WrestleMania at least 9 times out of 10. If they're going to order one, they're going to order that one, and it's going to do huge. He's in Miami. He's probably going to go into the Hall of Fame. There's probably going to be a bunch of luminaries and celebrities there. I mean, you get the South Beach thing. It's going to be big, and WrestleMania, again, unless they do something epically stupid, is always going to continue to grow dollar-wise because of all the other stuff that goes around it. Now, again, that does not excuse the rest of the year, but, yeah, it's going to be epic this year with the amount of money they bring in and appearances outside of the, charity appearances and the fan fest and all that sort of stuff. It's going to be massive.
This person here says, I remember being so excited for the Money in the Bank match with Punk and Cena that me and a bunch of friends road tripped to Chicago from New York to see it. The crowd was absolutely amazing. It was way worth it. I also remember WWE dropping the ball right after that pay-per-view, and they haven't recovered since. That seems to be, among a lot of fans, the prevailing belief of how 2011 went.
Yeah, so disappointing to so many people. For the hardcore fan, they're the ones who's followed CM Punk's whole career in IWA Mid-South and in Ring of Honor and, getting in a fight with Teddy Hart outside the White Trash Cafe and TNA and things like that. So it cuts them to the bone a little bit more. But the problem was the average fan that, gets behind things, they started to, and it's been worse in the last few months even than that, but they started seeing plot holes and things that don't make sense, and they can't understand why. And when you have the average fan doing that, which is the one that they aim for, it shows a big, big problem. And that CM Punk thing, again, there's a million and one ways you could have went with it. You weren't going to make everybody happy because there were just so – I mean, people were talking about Ring of Honor invasions and all of this stuff. I mean, it just got, to a fervor pitch. But the problem was they not that they didn't even tap
Actually,
on
Actually, hold
that.
On. We got to head to a break. Hold that thought. Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com, who was so excited about talking WWE and the company dropping the ball that he went over the break. So, back.
52 weeks to get into 2 hours. This is very, very difficult to do.
That's right. Let's get into it. You're on.
still, just, you know, again, they didn't make anybody happy. And the continuation was what I was talking about with Punk and with, you know, the average fan, the hardcore fan. Nobody seemed to be happy. Guys, you know, and again, it's not like I'm inside the locker room and knowing what's going on, but there was enough things that came out of it where it was just disappointment over how they handled things. And again, like you said, WrestleMania can make the whole year spin around for them, and that's great. But they go into this malaise every year afterwards, which was disappointing, and even more disappointing in that one thing we always say about WWE, when they have time to do something, when they put their mind to something and their efforts behind truly doing something, there is no one better than them. And you thought with a year build, with The Rock and John Cena, that was announced at this WrestleMania, and there was some debate, you know, should they have announced it that soon? What are other guys going to say? I mean, all of these things that go into it. What if the Rock, somebody gets hurt? What if there's a movie? Any of that stuff. You know, and they haven't, again, you have The Rock. You have The Rock, and we're talking about a pay-per-view that just passed with the Survivor Series. It used to be one of their traditional ones. And we're talking about that not doing that great. And that's including The Rock. And it again, it shows you how bad they've misstepped this year.
This person here has three memories, three things that shockingly we have not talked about yet. The first, which actually is not a huge story, but it's certainly an interesting story, WWE helping book a heel properly with Mark Henry, or handling the booking of a heel properly with Mark Henry. That was a big story for the latter half of the year. Mark Henry, and it's hard to say because SmackDown always has a renaissance when the fall season begins, but the day, the first SmackDown, after Mark Henry won that title, SmackDown ratings went through the roof. And they have been at a 2.0 or higher every single week since Mark Henry won that title. Mark Henry, of course, it's funny. I've mentioned this for years and years and years. People always talk. I think it's based on WCW when you had all these old guys headlining. And fans were always talking about, we want new young guys on top. We want new young guys on top. And I think that fans got into this mindset of, well, a person on top should be new, and they should be young. And the reality is, it isn't so much the person's age or whether the person is new in the company, but whether it's just a new person on top. Mark Henry has been with WWE since 1996. He has been there longer than almost anybody. But the fact of the matter is, Mark Henry had never been world champion before, and they built a storyline around it. I have been trying to win this title for 15 years. For 15 years, I've tried to be the world champion. Now I've won it, and I'm never going to lose the title again. He ran roughshod over everybody. He beat Randy Orton time after time after time, and nobody beats Randy Orton or John Cena. They pushed him as the top guy. He was a brand new face on top as champion, and it worked, because it's not hard. It really is not hard. And Mark Henry is proof that if you do it right, it's not hard.
And you forgot about something we talked about, Randy Orton. Not only beat him clean.
Clean!
There's the other thing. Beat him clean as a sheet. So, and again, people like Mark Henry, and I know there's pushback on Mark Henry, people just going, you know, the fact that he's a nice guy isn't a reason he should be on top. No, the fact that he's a big, monstrous guy, and again, it works with the Big Show, too. It works with a lot of guys. For right or wrong, no matter what it is in the psyche of a wrestling fan, when a guy is a monster, and you know he can legitimately hurt you, when you think, if I was running up on this guy in an alley, what could I do? And you look at Mark Henry, and I don't care who you are, I don't care what you know, unless you're, you know, that top-trained jiu-jitsu guy or something like that. You're thinking, this guy's going to do serious damage to me. And it's like the Big Show. You can
Well, hold on.
For-
I just want to say that I've been doing jiu-jitsu for a long time. And Mark Henry would kill me.
Well, that's the thing.
He's
you know,
a big, strong beast.
It's yeah, it's heavyweights. It's why, you know, and again, people always call it, there's great action with, you know, heavy, you know, lighter guys in MMA and boxing and all. That's true, but people still like seeing big dudes wreck shop. And it's what wrestling was built on. It's what WWF built the 80s on, these big superhero guys wrecking shop. And Mark Henry is a big guy who looks like he's wrecking shop. And that's why people are buying in. Again, the fact that he's been around for so long and people know the story about how he's been put down so much and the fact that he is a nice guy, yeah, that all helps. But the fact he's wrecking shop in a believable pro wrestling manner, that's what makes it better. It's the story that brings you back, and it's not that hard.
I can't believe that I'm about to talk shooting with Mark Henry, but I'm gonna. Mark Henry's a big, strong beast. And, like, I think, okay, if somehow I got behind Mark Henry and I got his neck, I think I could put him out. But I don't think people understand guys like the size of Mark Henry and guys the size of the Big Show. You know, everybody, when they watched UFC 1, they saw a little guy, Hoist Gracie, beating these bigger guys. But, I mean, the reality with UFC today is there are weight classes. And there's a reason that we haven't seen this George St. Pierre versus Anderson Silva fight. They're two of the best guys in the world, but they're separated by 15 pounds. So the idea of this fight happening, that's one of the main reasons this fight may never happen. You know, one guy is just so much bigger than the other guy. So when you think about Mark Henry, you know, imagine, like, I don't care how good a little kid might be at jiu-jitsu. If that kid weighs, like, 80 pounds or 70 pounds and they're trying to beat me, I'm only, like, 145 pounds. They're still going to have a hell of a time because they weigh 70 pounds. You know, there's still that aura about the big, strong, giant guy, like the Big Show or Mark Henry. I don't care
Brock
how big...
Lesnar.
Yeah, Brock Lesnar. I don't care how big UFC is nowadays. You, if properly pushed, you can still make people believe that nobody can beat Mark Henry, no matter how good they are, because he's so big and he's so strong. And they have done that, and it works in 2011.
And what you do is what they look like they could be doing, but they probably won't because they always do this sort of thing. You got Cody Rhodes, who wants a piece of Randy Orton. You got Randy Orton, who still wants a piece of Mark Henry. He wants his title back, but he still wants to get back at Wade Barrett. And Barrett wants to go after Orton, but he's talking about going after Henry. And you build these guys, and you figure out a way where they come up with a move that's going to beat a guy like Mark Henry. They're working on something. They're improving, doing something. And that's not revolutionary stuff. That's just professional wrestling stuff that, again, yes, you doll it up with different people, with different things, with gimmicks, with angles and things like that. But with all that said, it's just a simple story that you tell, and it's why when they forget about SmackDown every year, which they seem to do every year, they have this renewed push for the fact that it's a fall season coming up, and they push things and they do some things, and they kind of forget about it, which always makes that show that much better.
This person also mentioned UFC's first Toronto show. I have memories of this show. I was there. And I know
that
this is kind of a bad analogy, but in some ways it reminded me of WCW, and I'll tell you why. Obviously, it was significantly more successful than maybe anything WCW ever did, with the exception of like a show or two. In fact, gate-wise, it was more successful than any pro wrestling or mixed martial arts show of all time. $12 million gate. You know, prior to that, the biggest gate was in the 7 million range. So I realize it's preposterous to compare to WCW, but the one comparison I will make is that for the rest of my life, my memory of that Toronto show, I have two memories. One is how many people were there at that show. I was in a building with 55,000 people watching MMA. That was awesome. My other memory is, I don't care how good the undercard of that show was, I will never forget the fact that the main event sucked. You know? And that's the thing with WCW there at the end. That's one of the things, it's one of the problems that they had in WCW. You know, when people look back at WWE's glory period in the late 90s, a lot of people forget that for a long time, the undercards were horrible. You had the Los Boricuas. You had the Truth Commission. You had these god-awful matches underneath on pay-per-view, but the main events were great. And so when the show was over, people were like, man, that was a great show. Because the last thing they saw, the last memory they had, was a great match. Whereas in WCW, they had some awesome undercards in WCW. Some great undercards. But the main event would then be Hulk Hogan and Roddy Piper in a cage match, which was one of the worst matches in years, by the way, at the time. So when the show was over, people remembered, God, that main event sucked. And so they went away thinking that show was no good because it was the last thing they remembered. And, you know, believe me, in 5 years, if you say, Brian, name one of the matches on that Toronto show, I won't be able to name a single undercard match on that show. But I will forever get to tell you that George St. Pierre took 5 rounds to beat Jake Shields via decision. And it sucked. That's what I'm going to remember from that show. And it's too bad because it was a fun show. It was an awesome experience live. And I've said this many times. I talked to people in the Canadian media when I went up there. And before the show, we were talking about George St. Pierre. And, you know, where does George St. Pierre rank as like a sports star? Not just like an MMA star, but a sports star in Canada. And they're like, oh, my God, he's huge. You know, he's right up there. He's top five just as a mainstream sports star. And I just remember going to that show and thinking, you know, George St. Pierre, I still believe this to this day. If George St. Pierre wanted to, if he hadn't have psyched himself out about Jake Shields' skills on the ground, you know, he could have got in there and just slaughtered that dude. And instead, he went in there, he fought a safe fight, he fought to win. Actually, he fought to not lose is what happened. And he went five rounds. And there were GSP fans, you know, this was in Toronto, and there were people booing that main event live. And if he'd have just gone in there and absolutely slaughtered Jake Shields, he would have been an all-time sports legend in Canada. Instead, didn't happen because of the because of that fight.
Yeah, I don't look at it as poorly as you do, you know, because there were a lot of great fights on that show, and the amount of money they made and the fact that it was, you know, opening the market and sticking their nose up at Buffalo and New York City. You know, I think all of that I'll remember a lot more. But with that said, yeah, I mean, it's shown a light on GSP in that, you know, great athlete, great man, great star, but marketable only to a point, I think, because of that fight style.
All right, we'll be back after a break. Wrestling Observer Live, Year in Review 2011, here on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com, here talking the Year in Review 2011. We're trying to get through all these emails. It's going to be impossible, but we're going to do our best. Mike, we're talking the Year in Review 2011, and one thing we have not mentioned yet, shockingly, is the death of Randy Savage. And the thing that sticks out to me about the death of Randy Savage is not so much that Randy Savage is no longer with us, because there was a period where he had disappeared off the face of the earth. You know, he had kind of gone, he'd become a recluse. And so really, it's not a whole lot different as far as Randy Savage being in the limelight today as it was in the mid-2000s. But what struck me the most about his passing, he had a heart attack while driving, crashed into a tree, massive heart attack, and passed away, is the fact that it really came out when Randy Savage died that he was an icon, perhaps not on the level of Hulk Hogan, but way, way up there. Like, far, far, farther up the ladder than I had conceived prior to his passing. The media attention that this man received when he passed away. There was a whole generation of fans that grew up doing his catchphrase that maybe they didn't watch a lot of wrestling, but when they did watch wrestling, they were struck by Randy Savage. And they did flying elbows onto their bed. They did his catchphrases. They probably, if they ever wrestled, made some sort of outfit involving fringe. Randy Savage was an icon to the level that I didn't quite understand until he passed away.
You're not lying. I'm the same exact way. If 90% of the country knows who Hulk Hogan is, at least 75%, if not 80%, knew who Randy Savage was. I work with the public, and it was amazing. You know, people out there always know you like wrestling, but they, you know, most of the time, unless it's a big name or something like that, you never hear them say anything, but you know, people that you would not have expected, they came out, you know, and talked about Randy Savage, the line running on ESPN that day over the fact that he had passed away, and you just, always being a wrestling fan, you forget of the good side. To me, at least, I forgot about the gravity of some guys to the rest of the public. All those athletes that grew up in the same era that I did, that watched that WWF era and the Macho Man Randy Savage and, you know, the Ooh Yeah, and just everything about him being a character, I just like you and like a lot of people, you know, really inside wrestling and people that strongly follow wrestling, I think we were all surprised, and it was a positive surprise in that Randy Savage was just so well-liked and looked at and known by everybody.
This person here has memories of CM Punk. I don't know if you can use any of these, but my best memories of 2011 was the one-month stretch CM Punk gave me where I enjoyed a character more than I have in several years or since he's come back. He's got a list of his top 10 CM Punk moments here, but so many people got interested in WWE as a result of CM Punk, and then when WWE didn't capitalize, they left. We've talked about this ad nauseum here on the show, but it deserves to be said that more and more emails are coming in about that. In fact,
well, they may have butchered him this year or not used him in the way that most people think that they should have. But with that said, CM Punk himself had a great year. The way he was able to carry that ball and that way that promo went, and there was some foreshadowing the week before that really people were just blown away by, you know, cutting that promo. He himself had a fantastic, fantastic year. And as a fan of old school WWF wrestling, we got mentions of the ice cream bar back.
That's right. Rolando here. Nothing that stands out for me this whole year but the CM Punk angle, which was quickly ruined. There's another one.
Yeah.
He also says, my memories of 2011 have to do with how incompetent wrestling has become, and the simple notion of keeping it simple, stupid, is not used. For me, this was the rise of WWE classics. I long for the days of NWA old school, WWF wrestling, AWA wrestling. I miss the characters, the different shapes and sizes. I miss the storytelling. Once old becomes new again, I really wish this would happen in wrestling.
And that's one of the main parts of the Punk thing, too. He said all of those things. He spoke in a lot of ways, you know, the way it was scripted. They touched on a lot of those things that the quote-unquote 10%ers really love. But the thing they forget about and getting away with it, you know, from that and then making fun of it or burying it is the fact that after all of these years, we're still the ones that are still here. You have to cultivate and create those guys. You can't just make fun of them.
Aaron here says, one of my memories of 2011 is when Gail Kim eliminated herself from the Divas Battle Royal on the August 1st edition of Raw. It was hilarious. It also proved a point. WWE doesn't care about their women's matches one bit. For those who don't remember this, what happened was WWE told her backstage, we want you out early. So she was getting ready to leave WWE anyway. She was sick of it, so to speak. And she went in there and proceeded to just leave the Battle Royal. She just eliminated herself and walked to the back and quit. And, of course, they wouldn't let her go until her contract officially expired, at which point she immediately went to TNA. But there you go. Gail eliminating herself, this man's favorite memory of 2011.
Well, hey, you know. They're a perfect example of Kelly and everything. And, you know, Karma, actually, we should mention Karma since brought up women's wrestling, too. One of those things, when they signed Sin Cara, one thing they did, they signed Karma right after WrestleMania. I think they began those vignettes, and it was like they
awesome
did
Kong.
Everything right. And not unfortunately for Karma, because, you know, she's pregnant. I hope she's, you know, very happy that way. But bad luck for her timing-wise, if you could say that, about pregnancy. But very much bad luck from a professional side with WWE, because they were really, really on to something right there in a way to spark their women's division. And frankly, Gil Kim probably still would have been there if Karma was.
We've got Leo here. His memories, all of the canceled UFC main events due to injuries. Well, it's going to be your memory of 2012 as well, most likely.
You know, and Dana White's going to be beaten on that one when it comes to anybody talking about business for eternity.
Greg here. He also excited about CM Punk for about 3 weeks. He also says, my memory, Eric Bischoff being held captive by a bird. That really happened, everybody. That really happened on Impact. A bird held him hostage. Awesome.
There, you know what? You could at least say there was a little bit of camp humor to that, whereas there were a lot of situations in both companies this year where it's like there wasn't even camp humor. It was just, you know, you want to, you know, tear your eyes out with a dagger type stuff.
He also mentions Matt Hardy being a moron, Jeff Hardy versus Sting. That's right. Jeff Hardy showed up in no condition to perform for a match with Sting. He actually was all messed up backstage, and because the TNA creative team has no idea what they're doing, or they didn't at that point for sure. They couldn't come up with an alternative, so they sent Jeff Hardy to the ring in that condition, and Sting beat him in a minute. That was something else. He mentions Randy Orton injuring himself pounding the mat, which he thinks was in 2011. That, in fact, happened as well. And Tough Enough, where the girl mentioned her favorite match, Alicia Fox versus Melina, which, as it turns out, that girl ended up being hired by WWE. No joke.
Yeah, that was painful, but one thing that was not painful was that show, which was a great concept for the year, and it got Bill DeMott and Booker T back on TV, and Trish Stratus as well. So that Tough Enough show, which ended with Steve Austin rants at the end, going heads up against the people he was eliminating, were just fantastic.
Daniel here, what a year he had. His memories, ROH getting chucked off TV, then getting back on TV. The biggest star of the previous generation, The Rock, coming back and it being fine. TNA getting better than the crap it was. Signing up for this website. And TNA Coastal Cruise tickets, which I got from my girlfriend. And he puts in parentheses, not going. He also says, me asking my girlfriend to marry me, but I always forget that one. So there you go. Daniel's memories of 2011. And hopefully his girlfriend is not listening.
I remember that guy, I think. Yeah, because she was so excited that, because he wanted wrestling tickets, and she thought she did something great by getting him the cruise tickets. And yes, I feel sorry for that, man.
Michael here. He says, here's some of my memories in no particular order. He remembers in WWE rushing Sin Cara out to Raw and letting him falter when they could easily have helped him out. Says Triple H being the one to relieve Vince of his command on Raw, only to have Vince turn around a month later and do the same thing after one heck of a bad angle to a really bad direction. That's true.
Hey, Vince cried on TV. I love you, Pop.
Do you remember, I don't know Triple H. I've never spoken to the man in his life. But you can't tell me. You cannot tell me that Triple H didn't think that this was the stupidest angle of all time, where he, as the legitimate son-in-law of Vince McMahon, who, if Vince McMahon died in a car crash tomorrow, would in fact be taking over as head of WWE, they did an angle where they put Triple H in charge and proceeded to make him look completely incompetent at his job.
I know, but they ran out of things also as well, because if you think about it, Triple H should have never come back this year, should have never come back in the form that he did, but it seems like every summer, like they've done for the past, four or five, Vince has got to get off TV again, and this is the one they came up with, and again, they blew it, because you go from one incompetent guy to another, and it was the problem that mainstream fans have had, where there's obvious plot hole lines.
He remembers Twitter Mania. Who could forget?
Ugh.
And one other here. He remembers in TNA, Jesse Neal mentions on Twitter that he qualifies for food stamps at the same time he was one half of the TNA Tag Team Champions. I don't think he was part of the champions at that point.
I don't know about that, but at the very least, he wasn't the only one to complain about not getting paid, if I recall correctly, or at least not getting paid enough.
He also mentioned, we should mention this because we may never see the guy wrestle again, Hulk Hogan versus Sting. He says, by all reports, a pretty decent match to finally end the Hogan-Sting feud, although a nonsensical face turn by Hogan. Hopefully it's Hogan's last match, at least until I can watch him walk without wincing. Well, don't plan on that. It was not a great match, but they did absolutely the best job they could, and Hulk Hogan being Hulk Hogan made that face turn work. It was something else. So I gave that whole segment a thumbs up. I don't know if you ended up seeing it, Mike, but it was a thumbs up.
No, I didn't have a problem with that at all. But again, it didn't mean what it should have, because those things have been done to death so many times.
All right. This person's memories. Having John Cena, Triple H, Michael Cole, and the stale status quo shoved down our throats constantly by an increasingly out-of-touch Vince McMahon. Worst of all, every time something interesting happens, having it be ignored, downplayed, or otherwise written out of the great tapestry of WWE history. God forbid we see anything new or different. There are no new Rocks or Austins because they won't let anyone get to that level. It might detract from Cena or Hunter too much. It's awful, says Justin.
Well, it's one of the problems we talked about last year, talk about every year, when you have guys come back. Undertaker will probably come back for WrestleMania. Austin probably won't. Jericho probably won't. But, Foley and Rock and all these guys, at some point you're not going to be able to bring them out and have it mean anything if you keep doing it, or if you just don't cultivate anybody else new, and they're running into that problem. At some point, you can't get Michaels back. You can't get these guys back. Then what do you do?
Brian here says, I'll remember 2011 as a year of missed opportunities. Morrison started off the year with a great performance at Rumble and Chamber, only to have nothing be done with him. In fact, he's out of the company by the end of 2011. He was written off in Zack Ryder's online show. He stepped into a limo, which blew up. He also said, we had The Rock involved in WrestleMania. For the most part, that was a fail, with the ending being really bad. We had the big Punk angle, which excited everyone, and then, as always, went nowhere. In the end, 2011 will be remembered as a frustrating year because it had potential, but never delivered.
Well, yeah, and how it sounds from everybody that's been writing in, and probably a lot of the people listening, yeah, they agree.
And Josh here, Josh Nason, actually the first to mention, Zuffa purchases Strikeforce. The ongoing discussion of how much is too much MMA, the ongoing discussion of Brock Lesnar's health, UFC debut on Fox, and CM Punk's rise to pop culture fame. I don't know if I'd go to pop culture fame as far as CM Punk, but he was talked about there for a while. How much is too much MMA? We don't have time for that one today, but that's a discussion for maybe another full show. We're going to head to a break. When we come back, more Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. And we are back here for the final segment on the show. Brian Alvarez here, WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi of the Adam and Mike Big Audio Nightmare, also at WrestlingObserver.com. We started out this show trying to do a full 2011 year in review. How preposterous that idea was. But we got into a lot of different things. We read a lot of your emails, some of your memories of 2011. And before we go today, Mike, as we look at the year 2012... when the end of 2012 comes along, presumably the world will not have ended, but when the end of 2012 comes along, do you think we'll be looking back at the year 2012 and going, you know, that was a great year? Do you think we'll go, eh, it was a year? Or do you think we'll look back and go, man, this year was a disaster?
I think it's either going to be it was a great year or it's a disaster, because all the MMA eyes are going to be on the UFC and on the Fox deal. If anything falters there, and again, the next show they do, which will be, you know, early in 2010, should do great. It's what happens after that, and can they hold on to people? So it's either going to be a sink or swim thing, you know, for most people. I think looking at that when it comes to the UFC and with wrestling, again, I don't think it's going to be great, but they could turn it around. So, you know, most people are either going to say it was malaise or it got worse.
I always like to think positive, but the signs going into 2012... I think that in the end, 2012 is not going to have been a great year for UFC. I could look like a fool here at the end of 2012. The Fox deal may just absolutely explode. But I see buy rates continuing to fall very, very slightly over the course of 2012. And obviously it's going to be a good year in terms of making money off the television deal. But as far as like overall pay-per-view numbers, I don't see them going up. I see the same number of injuries. I just see it not being a great year for UFC. And for WWE, I think it's going to be a great year because of The Rock. Rock and Cena alone is going to make it a great year financially for WWE. As far as the rest of the year, I don't have high hopes, just based on the way things have been going and how they've been writing their television. Probably not a great year outside of WrestleMania. But at the end of 2012, we're going to talk all about it here on the show. We got to wrap it up. Want to thank everybody for listening and participating. We'll be back next week with a brand new show, Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network.